The Guardian.
Before you get started with this Guardian podcast, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian to get 10% off your first purchase. And now, on with the show.
Token.
Hello and welcome to Token. I'm Freddie.
And I'm Leia.
And this week we're talking about strength.
We're talking about male strength, strong women, strong bodies.
Double standards.
Yeah.
All sorts of things. And we have a guest. We have our second guest.
Hey, guest.
Who are you?
Hello, hosts. My name is Tom Ballard. I'm an Australian comedian. I assume I'm here because I'm very buff and have ripping abs. Absolutely. And I'm very strong.
I'm here to represent the stereotype. So Hillary Clinton has been in the news this week, and not
as
just,
I know,
sounds like a ridiculous thing to say.
And all the weeks.
But yeah, all of the weeks. But specifically this week for a slightly different reason, which is that she's been ill, and therefore we have sort of seen a side of her that is maybe new to us. We've seen kind of a weakness in her. Leia, what did you think about the coverage?
Well, it was interesting. Like, it's definitely super problematic for Hillary Clinton that she has pneumonia because, like, no. Bear with
me. Yeah.
It's really problematic because, like, she's kind of busy right now because she's trying to be the president. Mm. But the way it's being spun by, like, Donald Trump is, like, see? She's, like, literally, I mean, she's a woman and I told you she was weak and now this is proof.
Not, like, only was she weak, but they were saying they had all these conspiracy theories about her being, like, terribly ill. And basically infirm.
Yeah.
So it's really not cool. It's not great for her.
I know. And it's like, it's the insinuation is that her pneumonia is a result of, like, her vagina. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like men get pneumonia.
Yeah.
And they get ill too. But this has just been kind of, like, seized upon as proof of her complete inability to do anything. But, like, this might actually mean she can't be the president because she literally can't do anything. But so they don't need to, like, also jump on it.
Yeah. The double standards across the US election are a living, breathing example of how we judge men and women differently. Mm. But particularly around the health stuff, it's not crazy or unsurprising, perhaps, that someone would get run down. There was a lot of discussion and concerns and conspiracy theories about Hillary Clinton's health from the get-go. This only adds fuel to the fire. I think it's very awkward because we're not used to publicly talking about people's health. But when it comes to the president of the United States, that is an actually relevant issue. And it is actually something that should be on the public agenda. And so it is all relevant. But the response to Hillary being sick and having pneumonia, which is something that does happen to people, does seem a bit bizarre.
It also happens to men.
Yes.
It's not as if this is a result of her, like, having a vagina that she got pneumonia. Like, she just got pneumonia and that's it.
Yeah. I don't think she does herself any favours, though, and it's hard to say this isn't to do with her being a woman, because obviously everything is to do with her being a woman at this point. Anyone in the public eye who is a woman is going to face that challenge. But
stop playing the woman card, Freddie.
Well, that's what, like, you know, she faces discrimination at every turn because she's a woman, but she's also, like, not a very likable personality in the public eye. I think it's fair to say that and it not be about her being a woman. I think anyone running for president has to be likable and has to be, or actually it not has to be, but it would really help them if they were likable. And she just has this. So the fact that when it happened, there was this kind of caginess about it, which, why didn't she just come out and say exactly what was wrong at the time? It felt so stage managed every time that she's accused of this, of misconduct about the emails, even though it's not as bad as some of her opponents are making out. She kind of did do some stuff that she shouldn't have done, and she still doesn't talk about it in a straightforward way, and that annoys a lot of people.
Okay, I disagree with you. Can you name me some really, really successful, like, high-up, likeable female politicians?
No.
No?
No, but...
Because okay. She can't be likable. Her mode of being and how she feels that she has to be, she has only got males to look to. So she tries to be super strong and super powerful and show no weakness. And then people are like, oh, she's not very likable, is she? It's pretty much impossible.
Yeah, I'm not saying that that's happening in a vacuum and it's not a result of where she is. But even if she could talk about that, that would really help her, I think, to actually admit that that's a situation rather than constantly having that mask on, which is what it feels like she's doing. Like, why can't she? Like, Julia Gillard was quite good at discussing how, you know, she's like maybe not likable in the way that someone like Barack Obama is, but she was able to critique her own problems that she faced. And she talked about being a woman and how...
After her prime ministership, I mean, yes, her analysis post-fact has been really interesting. And particularly the day when she, you know, did lose the prime ministership, she said, my gender doesn't say everything about what's happened to me as a political leader, but it doesn't say nothing about it either.
Didn't she stand up, though, and at one point directly talk to Abbott? Wasn't she still
She gave a misogyny speech there, yes. And, I mean, if you looked at the reaction to that, obviously there was an extremely positive reaction to the misogyny speech, and if people haven't heard it, I encourage you to check it out. It was an extraordinary moment. But, again, as Donald Trump accuses Hillary Clinton of playing the woman card by apparently being a woman, any woman in the public space, in particularly in politics, who wants to start talking about gender issues and the sexism they face are immediately accused of playing, being a victim and, you know, ascribing to victimhood. I feel like you can't really win as a woman in politics because you're either too weak and emotional or you're too overly emotional and you're going to PMS and then start a nuclear war, or you're not tender enough. You know, Andrea Leadsom and the Theresa May leadership contest suggesting that Theresa May doesn't have as much stake in the future of the country because she doesn't have children. So you're either too cuddly over children or you're barren. I mean, that was actually a word used to describe Julia Gillard at one point by a senator, that she was barren because she didn't have any children. So good luck.
I think this time around that it has to be Clinton, like, being the first woman to have a serious shot at being president because she is part of the establishment. But I think being part of the establishment is a weakness for her that's separate from her being a woman in some ways, in some quite narrow ways. Like, the fact that she's elitist, she has to be, otherwise she wouldn't have a run. There are probably some really young, charismatic, non-elite female politicians out there that we just don't know about because they would never have a hope in hell's chance of getting to the position of Clinton.
I don't know, this is a genuine question, when George Bush was running the first time round, were loads of people really annoyed because he was part of the establishment?
I don't know, I wasn't.
I'm not saying, like, oh my God, I love Hillary Clinton, isn't she amazing? I wish she was my best friend. Like, I agree that, like...
She's not very likable, is she?
Well, no, I don't know whether I would like her. But I'm also, well, like, I don't want to like...
She doesn't seem like a real person. Yeah, like a robot.
Yeah, but, like, okay, Barack Obama, definitely likable. He also doesn't seem like a real person, like, really, because he's, like, he's too likable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like Theresa May, not likable at all. David Cameron, don't like him. Can you maybe, like, run the country and, like, I don't need to go to the pub with you. I don't need to, like, hear loads about your life. I don't even really care. Like, I literally just want you to not fuck it up. Like, that's all. And I just feel like personality shouldn't come into it as much as it does, and if you're a woman it comes into it so much more, because basically you have to suppress your personality for people to even take you seriously, and then once you've suppressed your personality you're not likable. You're meant to be likable as a woman because, like, we're all here just to make everything really nice and pretty.
Yeah, so you think actually the way she is a calculated response to that problem?
Oh, totally.
And she's just like,
totally,
screw you guys, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think it's a calculated response in the sense that she probably worked out very early on that, like, her personality was not going to work for her, so she just decided to get rid of it because people wouldn't take her seriously. And I'm sure she hasn't still worked out how to please people because it doesn't work for her as well as it could be, but I reckon it probably works for her a lot better than it would if she just let it all
Let it all out.
It's kind of good because it does challenge that cult of personality that particularly in American politics seems to arise all the time. I mean, Obama danced on Ellen. Hillary's never going to dance on Ellen, and that's probably fine.
I really hope she doesn't.
No, because she was the Secretary of State. I mean, it's extraordinary. She is the most qualified candidate ever. Whatever, you may have problems with her particular policies and stuff, but just in terms of the sheer amount of work and experiences she's had in public policy in the space, and she is, by all reports, I've heard this from multiple sources of, not like personally to me, just in the news, people saying, you know, she is 9 out of 10 in terms of knowledge on every policy area you could name. She's the first female nominee, you know, for the, you know, serious major party to nominate a woman is Hillary Clinton, who is up there as probably the most bankable candidate ever. Yeah. I mean, the number of men who have been nominated with probably people probably going, this guy's not going to win, must have happened all the time. So it's an extraordinary thing that she's here and staring down the face of being the first female president. But it certainly says something about women in politics that it kind of has to be Hillary Clinton to be the first one, the most qualified and established candidate in the history of the world.
And even then, that's those unquestionable strengths in terms of her qualifications have hardly come into the public debate.
Well, they're now being used against her because that, you know, speaks to the fact that she is part of the establishment and she's been around forever and people want a new face.
I think people are suspicious of her, and I think people are suspicious of, quotes, strong women in general. Like, I genuinely believe that for a lot of people, they're like, like, who, what is this creature? Like, you know, I think, like, lots of women, even who aren't in politics, find it like a really, really difficult balance. Like, if you are somebody who is like confident or like happy to speak your mind as much as, say, your average man, like, you really have to temper it sometimes because people are a bit like, spooky.
Yeah,
it's like vulnerable. Like, the best and most attractive and sexy thing you can display as a woman is like vulnerability, just maybe a little bit,
unless you're, it's like dominatrix sex, in which case that's okay, because that's for men.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I feel, I'm trying to think of ways in which it's okay for women to be strong.
Yeah, like, and literally, if you're about to whip me. If you suck me off afterwards.
And I, yeah, exactly. If it ends in me ejaculating, then it's okay.
Yeah, okay, so that's a perfect example. Yeah. But it is just this, like, I think this is Hillary's problem, and it's also just a problem for everyone. It's like, strong women are not attractive, whether that means, like, sexually attractive or whether that means politically attractive. Like, people don't know where to put that. It's like, well, either you're a fucking man or you just need to sit and, like, be quiet and ask people questions rather than give answers.
That's the other thing. I mean, you know, a strong woman or even when sometimes people are complimenting an assured, educated, strong woman, it's in a gendered way. So it's like, hey, that woman, she's in control.
Yeah, yeah.
She's kind of like a man. Yeah. Thumbs up, ladies.
Yeah. Or guys who are like, I really love strong women. And it's like, no, you don't. What you love is somebody who looks sassy wearing heels. And that is not the same thing. It's like fashionable to be like, oh, I love a woman who speaks her mind. I love a strong woman who knows herself and da-da-da. But like, I find that the kind of people that say that are the kind of people who mean literally the opposite thing, and they just mean that their girlfriend stands out in a crowd.
Yeah, or it's
just
fetishizing.
I don't mean I wanted to have a conversation about deconstructing the patriarchy with her. That's not exactly
And also that's kind of termed in relation to her strength then that being something that is a benefit to him.
Yeah.
Like, it's for me, I like it. She does it for me.
Yeah,
does it for me, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I think this is, I saw another quote which, like, made me realize that this is actually as much to do with being part of a minority group, I would say, as it is to do with being a woman. Like, if you look at the protests being undertaken by NFL players at the moment, have you seen anything about this guy, Colin Kaepernick, who isn't standing up during the national anthem at the beginning of games? Like, it's that comes back to that you just cannot win situation. It's like, you do if you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. There was a quote by, it's attributed to someone called A.M. Leibowitz, who is described as a bisexual author of quirky LGBTQ plus romance. So I don't think it's Annie Leibowitz, the photographer. But the quote is, this is literally what it's like to be part of a marginalized group. Politeness is met with refusal to listen, and anger is met with demands for politeness.
Oh my God, that's like, so spot on.
Yeah, you could replace the word polite with, you know, strength, if you're talking about female politicians, so on and so forth. It's just like, I mean, this is something that I've experienced since transition, where like I find it much easier to hold people's attention when I talk now, because I've got like a deeper voice and people really read me as male. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like not in a kind of obvious way that I can really like give an example of, but just over time, where, and it was something that I thought it was to do with my own confidence, and that probably is partly what it's down to, but there's definitely a kind of sense of like, yeah, get
we
taken
need,
more
we
seriously.
We should listen to this guy.
Yeah, good idea.
Just letting you know that if you like Token, you'll definitely like our Close Encounters podcast.
Honest and heartfelt conversations about the sex that makes us who we are, with the ever brilliant Alex Fox.
You can find Close Encounters on theguardian.com/podcasts.
So I went to the gym a lot in Sydney, and I was surprised that, I don't know, by how strong the gym culture was, and sort of also how easy it was to obtain. If I'd wanted to, I think I could have very easily obtained like steroids and things like that. It's kind of like an open secret, I would say, not just for serious, quote unquote, bodybuilders or people who look like the Hulk. But, you know, I think it's sort of becoming normal for guys who really want to build muscle to use small amounts of various types of not just anabolic steroids, but sort of human growth hormone and other weird things with weird names that I can't remember, in this pursuit of the sort of masculine ideal. I think it's equally a problem over here in the UK, and it just doesn't. I just find it so weird that that is not more openly talked about, and that people who do that aren't criticized and scrutinized in the way that like women are for doing anything about their bodies. Like, for men, it's okay to pursue strength and muscle, even if it's in like this really kind of cheating fake way that's dangerous for your health. We're not going to talk about it as a society. Mm. We're just going to let it happen. We're going to praise those men for looking big and muscular. And if a woman wants to do anything to her body, that's what we're going to focus on and criticize, like whether they want to be skinnier or bigger or musclier or whatever. Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
There's an irony there too, isn't it? Because my understanding, and I am no gym junkie whatsoever, as Freddie and Leia can attest to, by looking at my form.
Handing yourself down, Tom.
You actually looked at my stomach then.
Sorry!
Totally fine.
I was looking for the thing I'd missed.
You're missing nothing, honey. My understanding is that there are some ways of working out, and certainly going about that, that is unhealthy and actually kind of makes you weaker or builds up your body in a certain way that means, like, if you push that person a little bit, they would tip over immediately. They're actually... You know, there are some people who are clearly dedicated to health and fitness and making their body as strong as it can be in a healthy, safe, you know, reasonable way. But then, that there is this crazy flip side to that, where people will do absolutely anything to make them look like what they think they have to look like as a physical manifestation of their strength and control, presumably to feed into their self-esteem.
Right? Well, yeah, I think every individual will have a different reason for doing it, and sometimes there are mental health issues involved. It's not about focus. It's not about sort of criticizing the individual. It's more about how we see that as a society, and the fact that it just doesn't, come in for criticism.
Yeah, I've never actually thought about that, but it is like, I mean, how many articles like this newspaper publishes about eating disorders and Instagram and how it affects women and their bodies and but like I don't remember seeing that many things about like, let's worry about all these men who have clearly got like body dysmorphia.
Well, even then there was a BBC Three documentary a while back about this, about guys who are sort of addicted to the gym. Even that was posed in this with way of looking at it as though it was understandable and good that these guys wanted to be strong and be these muscular, and like they were just doing it in a slightly wrong way. There was no kind of sense of like, why can't you just be a normal size man? Or like, you know, the idea that like pursuing this ideal in and of itself is unhealthy. Mm. Like it was almost like, oh, it's totally reasonable that you would want to be jacked.
Obviously.
And hit the gym all the time. Because that's what men do. And that's fine.
So I don't really do Instagram because it grosses me out, but sometimes I look on Instagram at like skinny people. Yeah. I do. It's really weird. And
so you must have an Instagram account.
I have an Instagram account, but I've never posted anything.
Okay.
But I like
so
to
you must
lurk
be better than
around.
Us.
No, I'm not saying I'm better than you. I mean, yeah, I am. Okay, so strong not skinny is like the new sort of trendy thing to call yourself. So it's like, okay, no, we've realized that like thinspiration is a worry. Mm. So what we're going to do instead of posting pictures of our ribs is post pictures of our abs. And so not only are you fat now, you're also fucking lazy. It's not like it's under the guise of like, women, you don't need to be thin, like you should be strong for yourself, and you know, it's cool to have muscles, whatever. But like, I just did a quick look before recording this, and just at the hashtag strong not skinny, there's not a lot of like super built women on there. It's like skinny girls with abs and pictures of like avocado. So it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's harder to like reject, because you're like, oh well, yeah, I probably should go to the gym. Like, you can't argue with that. And then if I did go to the gym, maybe I'd have ab like that, and maybe I'll just have an avocado for dinner. Like, it's just the same. Yeah. It's not, I don't think it's healthier. Like, obviously going to the gym is healthier than not going to the gym, but the pressure that it's like, okay, ladies, we don't really, you don't have to be thin anymore.
But you actually do definitely need to be different to what you are now.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone has things they do not like about their body. Yeah. And so any message out there that's constantly, yes, like, here's an example of something you should be, but, or, you know, you can put out all these different images of what you might be, but it's, the implicit message is things aren't good now. And there are problems with your body that you need to fix. And you need to spend money and time and stop seeing your friends and family to focus on fixing your weird
exactly.
body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's more unattainable, actually, than just being skinny, I think. Because, like, there's a very easy route to being skinny. It's not eating any food, and then you'll be skinny. But to be, like, to have, like, a really, really skinny waist with slightly defined abs and, like, a really massive ass and, like, you know, really lean arms. Like, you have to, like, these girls post pictures, of, like, videos of themselves, like, bench pressing and doing, like, press-ups and pull-ups and stuff that most people just can't do. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, not only do you eat too much pasta, but also, like, you're not very strong.
Yeah, you're not strong.
And you're just like, well, I'm fucked then.
Yeah. I mean, I think the strongest thing that a person can do with that sort of in their face the whole time and with ideals of what it means to be a man coming at you, surely the strongest thing you can do is like not give a fuck. Like that is really, that's the hardest thing to do in this day and age. Yeah. Like there's a Vine star called Christine Sedelko, I think her name is, and she is an overweight teenage girl. She may be in her early 20s, and she just absolutely revels in her body and the way she looks and the way she sounds. It's part of her comedy. It's so fucking funny and hilarious. And I don't know, I don't want to like put her on a pedestal for doing that, because that kind of defeats the point of her doing it almost, like, because she's not doing it for attention or to prove a point or anything. She's just being herself. And I think that's why she's so successful. She's got, you know, millions of Vines and however you count success on that platform. But yeah, she, it's, you know, it's just incredible. And then I saw a couple of Instagram posts yesterday of a woman who is also overweight and, you know, I think I think she's going for like an ugly look. I'm going to say that. Like, it's, I think it's part of her, what she's doing. She, she had a couple of pictures with a kind of pair of pants over her head with bread rolls over each ear, just sort of looking deadpan into the camera. She had, she's quite big, but she's got small boobs, and she accentuates that by like putting each boob in the end of a pair of tights and like pulling them up. So she's just making herself look completely bizarre and kind of horrific in a way. But they like putting it out there and being like, what, you know, what?
And what?
And what? Yeah, exactly. Like that to me is the epitome of strength.
Right.
And I go to the gym and I know it's because I'm insecure. And like, I just wish we could be a bit more honest with ourselves about that.
Is there something different though about the transgender experience there? I mean, after transitioning and I assume, you know, obviously doing things to your body, making changes about your body is important to you and important to trans people. And I can only imagine, and in this offence-free zone, if you are a trans man, then, you know, potentially beefing up or working out at the gym to look more stereotypically manly or to get bigger muscles like men are quote-unquote supposed to have might be an affirming experience?
Totally, yeah. I think that is a different experience. Right. And yeah, I wouldn't... I mean, I feel like I sit somewhere in the middle. I still find the really bulky look weird and unattractive, whether it's on cis men or trans men. But I think for trans men, I can totally understand more why that's an important process for them to go through. And certainly going to the gym for me was a process of masculinizing my body in a way, not like to be super strong, because I don't really want huge muscles, but I did want like my hips to look slimmer, definitely. But I guess for me it's about passing, which is a really, really problematic idea and something that a lot of people don't give a shit about, and it's probably healthier to not give a shit. But yeah, so I think it's different. It's not about strength so much as it is about sort of just being seen for who you are. And also, like, this is going to sound so wanky, but like going to the gym because you're finally happy in your body and you want to learn about it a bit more. Like, for me, going to the gym has been about, yeah, sort of discovering my body in a really sappy way. Just knowing what it does and what it can do and its sort of limits, because I spent my entire life up until transition ignoring it and covering it up as much as possible. So I'm sure there are some elements of insecurity and wanting to achieve the ideal male look in what I'm doing. And I'm jealous of people who don't give a fuck, like these women or people who don't go to the gym at all.
Hello.
Yeah, I was going to say you two, and I was like, maybe that was overstepping the line. So to finish, I have a question for both of you, and it is a multiple choice question.
Oh.
And I think whoever like answers second is probably going to have an advantage because it might take some thinking about.
What do we win?
Glory.
Yeah, being like right on.
Oh, my dream. That's what my life is structured around. Awesome.
If you get it right.
Okay.
No, that's that. There isn't a right answer. Okay, so this is about the Paralympics. So when you watch the Paralympics, do you see A, athletes competing in a mix of familiar and unfamiliar sports? B, a fascinating display of disabled bodies doing surprising things? Or C, inspirational superhumans?
I mean, I know what the wrong answer is.
I think I probably see a combination of A and B.
Mm.
I also struggle with this this rejection of inspiration. I know some people with disabilities who, you know, really push back against that label. And I understand that solely describing people with disabilities doing anything as inspirational is very patronizing. That's no good. But I still cannot help myself but find inspiration in people who have disabilities doing extraordinary things. I think it is slightly different with the Paralympics because they are elite athletes who happen to have a disability as well, as opposed to saying, oh, you dressed yourself, you're an inspiration with that disability. Yeah. That's obviously very problematic and patronizing. But, I mean, I respect any athletes. Whenever I see anyone in the Olympics or Paralympics do anything, I think, you know how many hours go into that and how dedicated they structure their entire lives around that goal. So it's amazing. And then the added element of being someone living in a disability in a largely ableist society, coming through that to the point where you're competing at elite level of sport, I find that quite inspirational.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, first of all, I don't really watch Paralympics. I don't really watch the Olympics. I don't like sports.
Okay, so it's not about the fact that it's the Paralympics. You just don't watch sports. Yeah.
If that were the case, well, like, I wouldn't have said it.
No.
Well, it's not as popular.
There's much fewer people watching the Paralympics than there was the Olympics.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I just hate sports.
Yeah.
And I find it really dull. But honest, I would say B. Mm. But I think it's because I don't like sports. So, like, the other element in that is, oh, these people are disabled and they can do all these things that I can't do. Mm. Like, that's cool. But I don't think it is cool because
you hate sports.
I hate sports. So,
I've just been thinking about, like, I think it's mostly B for non-disabled people when watching the Paralympics, but I'm not sure if we weren't in this, like, safe space of being able to offend people that we are, any of us would openly admit that in the way that we just have. Because I think what I see happening is...
I don't even
see
the disability, man. Right,
yeah. Because obviously you do. And then there's things like the Channel 4 Superhuman advert.
Mm.
And we have a wave of disabled writers and commentators talking about the fact that they really hate it. Mm. And a little bit of it gets through and some more non-disabled people kind of understand. But, like, the majority don't. And it'll probably happen again the next time kind of thing. And I just find it so interesting that we can't talk about disabled people in the same way that we talk about non-disabled people when it comes to being strong.
It's so fraught though, isn't it? Because if you're an able-bodied person and you've never experienced disability, it's very hard to get your head around. It's very hard to imagine it. It's hard to say something positive or in the same way that you would compliment or admire someone who doesn't have a disability who's competing in the Olympics as an extraordinary athlete. You could potentially want to say something about how extraordinary that is, but then you don't want to pretend they're extra super special superhuman beings because they have a disability, but you also can't deny the fact they have a disability or ignore that fact. Is there not still something truly great about the Paralympics, though? I mean, when else in society, and, you know, ratings figures aside, when else in society do we have an event or a large focus on event where people with disabilities are admired for their physical attributes and their physical capacity?
Yeah, but you don't get any events where loads of disabled people are admired for, like, their mental capacity. Like, right. As in, it's still about the disability. Fact that they're disabled.
Yeah, that's what,
like,
I'm saying.
I totally
it's
get
not about...
it's better than nothing, but, like, if there were just more general disabled people about on the telly, then everyone wouldn't be like, whoa, the Paralympics, wow, because, like, they haven't seen any disabled people on the TV until... like since 4 years ago when the Paralympics was on.
Yeah, if they were just, it was just like a different kind of athlete and different sports, I think they would be more popular because we wouldn't have people assuming that because it's the Paralympics, it'll be kind of lame and, yeah, that they won't be as strong and it won't be as good a competition. Like, I think there's probably an element of the fact that it hasn't been as strong competition up until more recently because you haven't had the same kind of level of expertise going into training those athletes. But now... you know, that competition is very much there. And I think faking it till we make it is probably the best thing we can do in this situation because we're, like, a bit crap dealing with, like, uncomfortable, unfamiliar situations. And maybe it'll work, but, yeah, I just think it's important to acknowledge that that's kind of what's happening.
We're all lying, basically.
Yeah. I mean, at least, non-disabled people.
No, and them.
Just everyone.
All liars.
Oh, yeah, I mean, everyone's lying in some way all the time. Yeah, definitely.
I agree.
Cool.
With what you said.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks, friends. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you.
Lovely to be here. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Good. And if people want to listen to your podcast, what is it called and where can they find it?
It's called Like I'm a Six-Year-Old, as in talk to me like I'm a six-year-old. It's me sitting down with political people and interesting guests talking about what they think about the world. And yeah, you can find it on iTunes or anywhere you get podcasts.
Excellent. Likewise with Token. And if you want to tell us what we've gotten wrong today, please do on Twitter. I'm tweeting at Fred McConnell.
I'm at Leia Green Tweets. And you can email podcasts@theguardian.com.
And if you just love us, go leave a 5-star review on iTunes.
Also, we are going to be on a short break just a couple of weeks after this because Freddie and I go on holiday. Woo! Not together. Although, I mean, no. That wasn't the invite. I just mean, like, it wouldn't be bad if we were, but
maybe
we're not.
Maybe one day.
Maybe. You never know. Anyway, yeah. There's going to be a couple of weeks off, but we'll be back. So
we'll be back. Indeed.
Stay tuned. Stay.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
They subscribed.
We'll be... yeah, that's the one. Okay.
Cool. Bye.
Bye.
This Guardian podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/Guardian.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.